It's poverty.
It's crime.
Unemployment.
Corruption.
Accountability.
The energy crisis.
Inflation.
We are worried.
That South Africa has myriad problems on all fronts is a given. But the time has come for us to look for real solutions. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and this MoneyWeb podcast will discuss those solutions on how South Africans can solve problems by having tough conversations and drawing on the insights of South Africa's top business leaders. Welcome to Fix SA. My guest is best known as an anti-corruption whistleblower, but he's also a mechanical engineer turned management consultant. He's an activist, and he also has a passion for using poetry to foment social change. You'll know him from his testimony to the Zondo State Capture Commission, where he disclosed how his longtime employer had taken part in the systemic weakening of the country's tax authority to enable corruption to go undetected. Athol Williams, welcome to Fix SA here on MoneyWeb. I'm Jeremy Maggs, where we ask our guests on this podcast how we can make things better. How do we improve matters, and how in the shortest space of time can we become competitive and successful once again? Athol, your journey's an interesting one. A mechanical engineer to a whistleblower. Let's park the poetry for a moment. It's unique. It's inspiring. Maybe before we get to the Fix SA stuff, just give me a sense of what has motivated all these shifts in your career path.
Jeremy, really good to be with you. You know, I think I chose to be a mechanical engineer. I didn't choose to be a whistleblower. So we'll come to that in a second.
I'm sure we will, yeah.
But for me, I've always been thirsty for knowledge. And so the idea of going to study and learn, I've completed 7 university degrees, including going to MIT, Harvard, Oxford, etc. So firstly, the route to mechanical engineer was one around thirst for knowledge, but also I love solving problems. And I think what engineering teaches us to do is to look at problems, right? There's a gap across a river, or there's a machine that, you know, doesn't exist. And then to use science, mathematics to design solutions and implement them. And I think that kind of thinking is very relevant in our society where we do face problems. And so need people who have the creativity to solve problems, but also to implement them with some scientific and other knowledge.
So, Athol, problems is fine on the one hand, but also it's about having the sense of right and wrong. And that has also informed perhaps the other important component of your personality.
Yeah, I think that is true, Jeremy. And you know, I often somewhat jokingly, but with seriousness, say I study ethics doesn't necessarily mean I'm an ethical person, right? And I've just taken and tried to take this practice of my citizenship very seriously. So I believe that as an active citizen, I've got to be acting beyond just my own personal interest. And that does have an ethical underpinning. And you know, I teach ethics at universities. I often speak about ethics and what ethical leadership entails. And I think ethics has got 2 important branches, just if I may. The one is to say I'm an ethical person, which means I will not do anything wrong, right? So I'm not going to go out there and rob someone. I'm not going to go out there and get involved in corruption. And that's fine. And so I think most people say they're ethical along that branch of being ethical. The second part, Jeremy, is where I observe and experience and witness others acting unethically, others acting wrongly. And I think that's where we often fall down. We think we're ethical because we've done nothing wrong, but yet we look the other way when we see wrong being done. And my view of an ethical person is one who does both of those things, who both does not do wrong, but doesn't allow wrong to be done either.
And somewhere in that mix or in that journey, we have lost in this country that notion of active citizenship. And that has, in many ways, I imagine, led us to the broken part of society that we're trying to fix.
I think that's exactly right. I certainly put our current situation in South Africa down to our loss of commitment to each other. I think if you look at gender-based violence, we look at poverty, we look at treatment of homeless, I think it's the same route that leads to corruption and state capture, which is fundamentally about us not caring about each other enough to look beyond our own current needs and act in the interests of other, right? Now this, I mean, this goes to the heart of what Ubuntu is, but I think we've kind of used Ubuntu as a almost a little cliche rather than really live it, right? Rather than stand at a traffic light and not jump the red light because, you know, my time's more important than yours, or cut in front of you in a queue in the supermarket because, you know, I'm more important than you. We've lost this ability, I think, to great sadness, of saying, I will embrace you just because you're another fellow human being, as opposed to cutting down at every chance I get. And so if you take that as a root issue that says, you know, I matter, you don't, of course you can explain a lot of the things that's happening in our country. And I think that's where we're going to start, Jeremy, by turning things around.
Why do you think we've lost that commitment to each other?
Yeah, it's a great question. Oh, it's a difficult question. You know, I guess you've got to start with a view of humanity, don't you? You know, there are some philosophers, a philosopher like Thomas Hobbes a few hundred years ago, who said that fundamentally, if you leave humans alone, we'll kill each other. We will live short, brutish lives, was his phrase. And so any government that stops people from killing each other is a good government. And that's sort of one argument. I hold the view, not the opposite of that, which is, you know, we'll all sort of sing Kumbaya and get along. I hold the view that we've got equal propensity to do good and bad. I don't, you know, we all know there's no child sort of, you know, is born racist or with malice in their hearts. And so some combination of our nature and nurture encourages and endorses certain behaviors. And so I think this is what's happened in South Africa. I think through morally bankrupt leadership, we've endorsed behaviors of selfishness. We've endorsed behaviors of disrespect for each other. And so young people growing up look for role models. They look for behaviors to emulate. And what they see is, to get ahead in our society, there's a particular set of behaviors you've got to follow. And so it's about lying and cheating and covering up. And I think that's what's been happening over time slowly. There's this idea that you don't matter, I matter. You know, to be honest, part of my determined stand to stand against corruption was I felt we need some people to stand up, even though it didn't make sense for me, for my career, for my personal safety. We need some people to turn this tide. How do you turn a tide of attitudes that say others don't matter? We need some people to say, I will not move. I will not budge because you do matter. And even if people are punching me in the face because of it, I still believe we've got to turn this tide. But it means individuals must start acting differently.
So let's talk then about the role of whistleblowers. But it's not just whistleblowers, Athol. It's people who find that commitment, that have the backbone, that believe something needs to be done. But it does come at immense personal, reputational, whatever, risk. How do you prepare yourselves yourself for the repercussion of your actions, knowing what you're doing is right and is needed to fix the country, but it comes with so much danger and so much risk?
Yeah, I vastly underestimated the cost I would have to bear for being a whistleblower. And this is, you know, you could argue naive, could be, I think it's because of my belief in humanity, but also I think some of that belief was misplaced. So I believe that I understood that speaking up and doing what I did would impact my career, but not to the extent it did, Jeremy. So, for example, I knew certain jobs might be closed to me because of what I did, but I fully expected corporate South Africa to embrace me because, you know, ethical leadership and good corporate governance is what, you know, everyone talks about. But to my absolute horror, even with holding all the degrees I do and 20 odd years of business experience, most businesses in South Africa have rejected me and continue to do that because I represent something that they do not embrace. So that came as a shock to me. It also came as a shock to me that we have no support for whistleblowers or those who are taking bold stands in our society. So I realized that there was no number to call. there was no website to go to for whistleblower help, both help in terms of what's the right thing to do, what's the best way to do things. And now, thankfully, we do have some of those resources. But 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when I went public, there was absolutely no resources. And so I miscalculated the massive impact, right? So that was one. And that wouldn't change my behavior right now, but I might think about going about it a different way. I do think there's a sense where you stop calculating the risk, though. I don't think Mandela, and I'm not suggesting I'm anything like Mandela, I don't think Mandela sort of did a cost-benefit analysis and said, well, you know, the benefit to society is this and the cost to me is this, and, well, you know, let me trade them off. And I think I got to that point where I couldn't focus anymore on the potential costs to me because I just saw the massive benefit to our society, and that's what really what drove me.
Athol, let's assume then that if we were to combat more successfully, do away with, eradicate corruption, it would go a long way to fixing South Africa. So based on your broad experience, not just with whistleblowing, but understanding the deep, dark cancer of corruption itself, something that you spoke out about, what practical steps can organizations, can businesses take to combat corruption more effectively? Or is the problem at this point in South Africa completely insurmountable?
I don't think it's insurmountable. I also question whether corporations and senior political leaders are the right place to look for the solution, because I think they've demonstrated time and time again that despite the Zondo Commission report, despite everything we know about corrupt corporate and political behavior, they will continue to follow those paths and be silent about what they've seen. So I sadly do not look to them for the solution, Jeremy. I look to a broader set of, you know, you and me and the broader South African public who work in those companies where we see the unethical behavior and operate in those public institutions where we see the unethical behavior. And I think we need more bravery. We need more courage of people to speak up. You know, at the Zondo Commission, I sort of ended with the phrase, very clumsy phrase of saying, you know, we live in South Africa in the era of the bully, where people are genuinely afraid to speak up. And I respect that, and I can understand that, because there are repercussions to businesses, to government officials, to individuals in the public for speaking up. And so I can understand that. So we live in the era of the bully. How do we conquer this era of the bully? It's got to be the era of the brave. And so it's got to be people knowing the risks involved, but being so committed to this country, so committed to the people around them, that they will say, I will act even though it might cost me. And that's a tall ask of anyone, but that's what's required. Any social change anywhere in the world has always happened when individuals say, I will act in the broader interest, not just my own. And so I think I want to speak to those individuals at those companies, Jeremy, in those government organizations, and say, you should do something. Don't wait for the leaders, because the leaders have shown us time and time again that they lack that courage.
It's such a compelling and such a powerful argument, but the reality is, Athol, and correct me if I'm misinterpreting this, is that civil society, individuals are so cowed, they're so afraid, they're so worried about the repercussion. And the business environment often exists where big organizations feel that they simply have carte blanche to act with complete impunity. And it's going to be difficult to try and mend or stitch all of that together.
No, I think you've described it accurately. And, you know, when I look at this, so what you've presented is the fact. So that's the reality we've got. Then we've got this vision of a country we want to live in. And, you know, just very simple analysis says, well, you know, what's going to have to change about the reality today to achieve that country you want in the future? And I think it's all too easy to say, well, you know, change the political party or change who the president is or change a few policies. And that's not the answer, because, in fact, we all know South Africa's constitution and many of our public institutions are world class. They are incredible. The problem isn't our institutions or our laws or our constitution. It's our compliance with it. And so it's about you and I saying, I'm going to wait at the red light. I'm going to stand in the queue and respect others. So it is hard, Jeremy. And you, we need a movement. We need a social movement to bring about that change. We need individuals to stand up and us to elevate those voices of those individuals. But it's not going to happen by just changing a political party or changing, a leader here and there. I think it is hard, but this is what our country needs right now. We need inspired people. We need people with courage to act. And for me, that's the bar I set for anyone wanting to have me taken seriously about wanting to fight for South Africa.
And we're not, Ethel, short of people like that, whether they live here or whether they live abroad. But what is stopping the formation then of the social movement? Because you're not the first person that's mentioned it.
Yeah.
But people are very good at talking about it, but nothing seems to happen. Is there something that needs to happen in order to spark that, which will then give that concept momentum?
Well, I mean, a social movement requires individuals to stand up, and individuals aren't standing up. So we have to understand that.
Individuals are standing up. I mean, let's be fair to them.
Movement, yeah, right?
That's not a movement, of course. Yeah.
Yes. No. I agree, and that's what I thought would happen, Jeremy. Right? I thought I would publicly stand up, make myself completely vulnerable, and then call on people to join me. That's what I did. That's how social movements start. And just consistently, people just said, nope, I want to live my comfortable middle-class life rather, Ethel, or, I've done my part already, or it's going to be too messy, or, I've got a family now. And we've all got very good reasons for why we're not acting, Jeremy. And that's been absolutely my experience. We will celebrate, when a sports person does something great, and that makes us all feel good. But when we actually want to address what's oppressing people in South Africa, which is ugly stuff we've got to fight, we cower. And maybe we're tired, right? Maybe we fought apartheid and we need 100 years of rest, not just 30 years. I don't know what it is.
Ethel, so much in this country needs fixing. You talk about stopping at the red light. And my rejoinder to you was going to be, that's if the red light is working at the moment, and then you've got to dodge the pothole, and the list goes on and on. Do you think, though, because of the frustration and the difficulty and the anxiety that people are facing right now, that maybe we are at some kind of tipping point, some kind of nexus where things might be moving in the direction that you're suggesting they could? Or are we still a long way away from that?
I think we are moving, and I think there is a tipping point. I think it's about options, about choices, right? And as much as I want to see a movement from the ground up, and I think that will happen eventually, we're not there yet. But I do also see new leaders being emerging. And I think that's what we need more of. So, I always think we seem to live in a world where there's a drop-down menu, right? So you click the drop-down menu and you choose capitalism, communism, or socialism, or there's a drop-down menu and you pick from these political parties or whatever it is. I think we're now seeing leaders who are willing to just serve sincerely for the good of our country. And now we've got a new set of options. And so what I'm hoping more and more is we as a populace are able to evaluate these options and say, let me not vote or support or work at a place based on old loyalties, but on what I really believe would serve the good of our country. I do think we need to offer people alternatives, Jeremy. It's the same old thing about, why does the guy who gets imprisoned come out and then commits crime again? It's because we don't offer him alternatives. And so I'm quite intrigued. I'm a scholar and an academic as well. And I'm quite intrigued in the idea of social norms, right? A norm is something I do without thinking about it. And no one told me to do it. I just observed over many years. And so I also do it, right? So in some countries in the world, it's fine to spit on the pavement. In other countries, it's not fine to spit on the pavement. So social norms. And I think what's happened in our country is we've developed these very bad social norms. But I think we can begin with behaviors and talking about it and setting examples of good behaviors. It's unacceptable the way we treat women in South Africa with the gender-based violence we see. But it comes down to how we joke and how we allow certain things to pass. And so I want to see an ethical turn, not all tree-hugging and kumbaya, but an ethical turn where we just take seriously some of the basic values of respect for each other. And I'm hopeful that begins to show an alternate, another way of behavior. Because, you know, this idea of hoarding money, for example, right? We're so materialist. And so people say to me, Athol, all your degrees, all the work you've done, right? Why do you live in a two-bedroom apartment? And I've made a personal choice to not hoard. And so where I collect money, I try and invest it in social programs. Now, imagine we all begun doing some of these things, right? And you're going to say, I'm an idealist. Of course I am. But looking away from ourselves, but to our broader society, I would love to see that as a social norm. And we talk more about that rather than, you know, the Forbes richest list and, you know, who's the richest billionaire this year.
Athol, as we draw to the end of this conversation, let me ask you this question, or let me put this to you, as you might have heard when you were giving testimony at the Zondo Commission. If you were made the Minister of Ethics in a new South African government and you had to come up with the most important thing, the most important policy thing at the top of your list, and I can hear your brain starting to whir very quickly, what would you say?
Gosh, a Minister of Ethics. I would say we've got to start with some of the most basic ideas of what it means to be a good, decent person. And some of the most basic, even the most advanced philosophers who ever talked about ethics would say the first thing is to keep your promise, to be a man or woman of your word. And I would start there. I think that would solve more than 50% of South Africa's problems if we just had people, no matter who they are, all the way up to leadership and the president, to actually just say what you mean and get on and do that. I think we'll change the country.
And then let's make this the final question. And then if you were to make this very small, then for our listeners, and I'm not going to say who are inspired by your journey, because I know we are inspired by your journey. But if we want to make a difference, is there one action that we could take today to contribute to a more just and equitable South Africa and therefore contribute to the fix?
I think it's probably linked to the same thing I'd say as Minister of Ethics, which is about keeping your word. Yeah, and again, this always sounds so pie in the sky, but the social movement that I think we need is going to start with just being decent people. And so I would say go out tomorrow to work and just smile at someone on the bus or help someone across the road. Just show that you care for others and start that movement. You know what I do? Because my wife keeps saying I'm a mad person. I walk in the mall and it irritates me when people bump into me, as it irritates everyone, right? So I go to the mall and start smiling. I just smile because I want to proactively or preemptively create this positive energy around myself. So when people then bump into me, I smile at them. And I think those are very small, tiny ways that we can actually make a difference by just firstly me being a decent person and then expecting and hoping others will do the same.
Our new Minister of Ethics, do you want the job?
No, I want to go and just teach children how to read. That's where I want to focus.
And that in itself is so critical as well, because we didn't even touch on the importance of education, particularly at the foundation level, Athol, which I know is very close to your heart. Thank you so much for an elucidating conversation. I do appreciate it, Athol Williams. And thank you for joining me on this edition of Fix SA on MoneyWeb. Thanks for listening to this Fix SA podcast. For more episodes posted every second Friday, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.